Varicosity Vein Center, providing vein treatment relief for vein disease, spider veins, and varicose veins for over 20 years. Their team of doctors and vein specialists deliver techniques and care for residents in Jackson, Madison, Ridgeland, and Central Mississippi. Information and appointment scheduling at varicosityveincenter.com.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.
Deep South Dining is the show all about the culture of Southern flavor, from fried chicken and collard greens to shrimp and grits and a glass of sweet tea. Subscribe now to the podcast using any podcast app or download our MPB Public Media app.
Okie dokie, folks, welcome back. Horticulture's Felder Rushing, and we're just talking about gardening. There's a lot of stuff going on out there, a lot of weirdness, usually to bugs and blights, and whether it's your lawn or your flowers or your vegetables or even your potted plants. So I know there's a lot of questions out there. I just go by Felder, and my awesome host, Java Chapman. Java, how you doing this morning, man?
Man, I'm all right, man. Hanging in there. Still hearing all the fireworks from 4th of July.
You know, it's just an amazing thing. And I know from all the stuff I see online, a lot of people are really concerned about their dogs. And, you know, dogs are scared of fireworks. I get that. But, you know, this is just something. We're going to shoot some stuff off.
Yeah, it's nothing to be, you know, said or done about it. It just is what it is. But, I mean, you know.
It is what it is. So, anyway, your kids doing okay this summer?
Yeah, everything's going good. We actually started swim lessons. So that's our latest adventure. I would, implore everyone, if you do not know how to swim, it's an essential life skill. The earlier, the better, but it's never too late. I actually saw an adult getting swim lessons, like right alongside my young one. So it's never too late to learn.
No, plus it feels kind of good, too. I don't know if you knew, but back when I was in high school, I had several part-time jobs. I delivered the newspaper, the Jackson Daily News, in the afternoon after school. Worked at Boy Scout camp a couple of summers, all summer as a counselor. Drove a snow cone truck. But I was also an assistant lifeguard at our city pool. Don't know if you knew all that stuff.
No, that's pretty cool, man.
Well, it was okay, except it was hot sitting up there, and I think that's where I got my permanent squint from the water reflecting on. People wonder why I wear sunglasses all the time, because I was raised in the Delta in the summer, staring at water. So, anyway, it's a whole lot of stuff going on, Java. A lot of people have got questions, concern. I keep up with a lot of it, even though I'm overseas. I'm still in England. Just finished my third flower show of my trip over here, and. A lot of people don't realize, but England has got many more flower shows than just the Chelsea show. There's the Chatsworth show, the Chelsea show, the Hampton Court show, the Southport show, the Chorley show, the Harlow Carr show. And I go to all of them. And my favorite one of all, well, my favorite big one, the Royal Horticulture Society puts on the great big ones. My favorite of the RHS show gardens is the one called Hampton Court. And matter of fact, it's going on right now, but it's big, it's sprawling, it's got hundreds and hundreds of gardens and exhibits. It's so much more interesting than the Chelsea show, which everybody holds up. You know, Chelsea is all about designer skills and people showing off what they can do. I call it, instead of horticulture, I call it horticulture, because it's really putting on the airs. Where the Hampton Court show is aimed towards real people. It's been going on for 30 years. Matter of fact, I was at the very first Royal Hampton Court flower show back in 1993. But it has stuff that people can do, ideas you can take on, water gardens ideas, seeding ideas, raised bed, combination of the flowers and herbs and vegetables. They have a special area for children where our elementary school classrooms get together and collaborate on little projects that kids can do. This year it was in trash cans, regular, what they call dust bins over here, but regular trash cans with all sorts of accessories and plants and things stuck to them. It's just incredible what kids have come up with doing in a trash can. So, you know, that's the kind of ideas that I really like about the Hampton Court Show. I got a couple of other things to share about that, but we're here to talk about gardening with gardeners. And we're going to slide up to South Haven and talk with Rebecca. Good morning, Rebecca. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Felder. So glad you're on the air today. I listened to you last week, and I had this, you mentioned this plant that I guess I knew it was out there, but I didn't know anything about them growing in Mississippi, and I don't know if it's a perennial or a shrub or a tree. You called it a tea plant. You said it was at the Ag Museum.
Well, what are I just planted plant? What this is. Well, you know, Camellia japonica has the big flowers in the wintertime, and Camellia sasanqua has pretty good size, real showy in the fall. Well, there's several other camellia plants, but the one they call the tea camellia is Camellia sinensis, which basically means Chinese. And it's a medium-sized shrub, sort of like a Camellia sasanqua. Has small flowers about the size of a quarter, a little bit bigger in the fall. They're usually white, sometimes they're pink. But all the tea in China is made from the leaves of Camellia sinensis. It's just a camellia. So it grows just like a sasanqua, fall-blooming sasanqua. And as long as you have a good wide hole and plenty of mulch to keep the roots cool and keep the worms active, it's really, really easy to grow. And it's not a showy plant because the flowers are kind of small, but still easy to grow, and you can make your own tea.
Well, that sounds cool because that's the main grocery item. Every time we go, we got to buy more tea. But
I tell you what, if you go online, I don't have their email address for me, but I interviewed a guy named Don, who's he and his partner founded this big tea company down in Poplarville. But they have recipes, and basically when you plant this, and you can buy the plants, but when you plant them, it's the little tiny new leaves that they make tea out of, not the older stuff. So what they do is they prune them back, and when they put out a bunch of new growth, the real tender new stuff, they snip that off and you chop it up, and you dry it, and depending on how you dry it, how long you dry it, stuff like that, it's whether it makes green tea or brown tea, or whether you flavor it with other stuff to make, you know, different kind of teas. But it's the new growth, so they shear them and then harvest the new growth, which just makes new growth. So, and that's all it is to it.
Well, at our house, we've had utter fits with camellias. We've bought maybe 6 or 8 camellia plants, and every one of them has died. We thought one of them came back up from the roots. We thought we had it, and then that died. And I'm like, oh, we have to keep buying.
Here's the thing about camellia. It's cold sensitive. You know, you get up into Tennessee and they get a lot of damage. In North Mid, we have camellia plants that my great grandmother planted almost a century ago in the 1930s that are still blooming. The trick is they need a wide hole, not too much stuff added to native dirt, but, you know, a nice wide hole. Add a little bit of bark or compost or something to kind of loosen up a little bit. And then when you pull the plant out of the pot, loosen up its potting soil and the roots so they get started in that. And the new dirt real quick. And as long as you've got a mulch, maybe up against an east or a south facing wall so they don't get the cold winter wind, they should do fine. So mostly a matter of digging a wide hole and loosening up the roots.
Okay, well, we'll try it again, maybe one time.
Okay.
Thank you very
much. Okay, Rebecca, you betcha. Appreciate it. And by the way, folks, I know they grow up fine because the Dixon Botanic Garden up in Memphis, Memphis Botanical Garden, they've got camellias, but they're kind of in a protected place. And again, it's all about wide roots, not shallow or not deep roots. So anyway, let's slide down to Oktibbeha County. Bob's calling from Starkville. What's up, Bob?
How you doing, Felder? I read an article this morning that said the best time to divide irises was mid to late summer. I divide them at a different time. What's your take on that?
Well, irises and daylilies and cannas are probably the three most forgiving perennials you can have. You can divide them while they're in full bloom. I mean, I work with Iris Society, Daylily Society, not a canna society, as far as I know. But they're really, really durable because they're almost like succulents. As long as you don't, you know, get a big, you know, little, as long as you don't divide it too small, you can move them even in the summertime. The big problem is, In the summertime, a young plant needs a little extra water, but it's real easy to overwater and to rot them. So anyway, iris is almost a succulent. You know, you can cut the leaves back if you want to or cut them back to a fan, but it's real common for Iris Society people to divide their iris and to share with each other and sell them while they're in bloom. So the main thing is try not to overwater them, and then make sure when you plant them that rhizome, the top part of that ropey-looking root, is baking in the sun. They like to be sticking part ways out of the ground. And if they fall over, cut the leaves into a fan, no problem.
All right. Can I ask you another question?
Oh, heck yeah.
Do you know the difference between European nightcrawlers and Canadian nightcrawlers?
Is this a joke?
No. I have tried to order some from Uncle Jim's, and they tell me that there's a difference to them. I do not know what that is.
You know, this is kind of strange. What's really stranger is the fact that I actually have studied earthworms a lot. I mean, that's really weird. It's not something you're
average. I know you're an expert.
But no, I'm not an expert. I'm just curious about them because they're my best buddies out there. And I've got six different kinds in my garden that I know of. Most people don't even know this. But I don't know the difference between Canadian and North American. I will say this. A lot of night crawlers we have in Mississippi are not native. We do have some because the glaciers didn't come quite this far south. But a lot of the big night crawlers we have are actually introduced from Europe and let loose by fishermen. And they're all over the place now. The birds will eat the worms and drop their little cocoons all over the place. So a lot of our big night crawlers are actually an invasive species out there. And then we've seen this new Asian jumping worm. And, we have some in Mississippi, but bottom line is there's only one really distinct worm that I know about. And if you dig in a really heavy clay soil, you come up with this worm that's kind of an olive green color, and it rolls up like a type of spaghetti noodle, and it has a really funky odor. And that's a down deep kind of worm. And when I see those, I'm thinking I need to do a better job of soil prep.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you answering my question.
Well, I'm going to go online and look because I'm just curious about stuff like this. It's a crazy thing, but I don't have a real hobby. So I'm going to look up Canadian versus American night crawlers. So stay tuned.
All right. Okay. Thank you now.
Okay. See ya. Okay, Java, that's a new one, man. That's a new one. Been asked a lot of stuff, but nope, don't know. Going to look it up. Horticulture's Felder Rushing. And before we go to this first call, Java, I just found out stuff that made my eyes bleed.
What happened, man? What you find out?
I just said Canadian versus American night crawlers, and there are unbelievable number of sources about it. And I didn't have time to read them all, but basically, our regular, what we call night crawlers, are 5 or 6 inches long. Canadians can get 10 or 12 inches long.
Whoa.
And I've got some of those in my garden. I have some that go from my elbow to my wrist. So I didn't know I've got Canadian night crawlers, plus the European regular night crawlers, plus this green olive color one that's called, we call it stink bait because you catch catfish with it. It's got kind of a funky smell to it, more than I wanted to know. And I want to throw out one little thing before we get calls about the new Asian jumping worm. You know how worms, I don't know if you noticed this, Job, but they got this sort of a ring around them, like a turtleneck part ways down their body, a thing that goes around them.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's like a little indention or something, on the body. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's like a belt wrapped around them. Well, the Asian jumping worms, that belt, that thing that goes around the body goes all the way around. With others, it's on just part ways around, like a saddle on a horse.
We
need to stop this now. Stop it now.
let's go to Larry. There we go.
Hey, Larry, how are you this morning? Calling from Wilkinson County. What's up, man?
Y'all got me laughing and thinking this morning.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff out there.
I'm thinking about that European versus American, and I'm saying, okay, they take a tea break and we take coffee breaks.
Yeah, that's right. So, and by the way, none of those are that good for composting. So what you got going on?
Yeah, I got a collard plant that I bought last year and planted it and some others, and it came back volunteer after all that freezing stuff from the root.
Yeah.
And it come up as two instead of one, and that thing got, I got some good leaves off and some good eating, and that thing got covered with these little bitty small caterpillar looking worms, and I couldn't eliminate them fast enough, so I just cut all the leaves off and the top out of it, and it's sprouting and starting to come back, and I'm wondering how to keep them things out of there. They was eating my plant up.
Yeah. Well, there's actually an easy solution to it, but most people aren't going to want to go to this much trouble. Isn't it easy? And by the way, if I don't know if you've noticed it, okay, let me back up. Collards and I can grow quite as well over the summertime as they will over the fall and the winter and the spring. So if you can just sort of keep them alive over the summer, that's good. And you can cut them back and they'll branch back out. But I don't know if you've ever noticed there's a white butterfly that flits around the garden. It's just plain old generic medium-sized butterfly, but it's white. And it lays eggs on collards, cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, all of those kind of things. It lays eggs on them. And those eggs, a little mass of eggs, hatch out into little green worms, and they turn it into what looks like a skeleton. Nothing but just strings left. So that's a larva of a white butterfly. And the easiest way to present that, there's some sprays you can use. There's a spray that they sell at all the garden centers that's a biological worm spray. It's actually a bacteria that stops caterpillars from feeding. And the nice part about it, it works. And if a bird comes along and eats it, the bird doesn't get poisoned. So there's a biological worm spray. If you put it on the bottom of the leaves where the worms are, that means a spray, not a dust. But the easiest thing is just get you some insect netting. You may have to go on lines where I found mine, but it's just a really lightweight netting. And you put some sticks around in your garden and put something on the end of the sticks, like a little bottle or a wine cork or a tennis ball, something on the end of the sticks to make it not sharp. And you just drape this netting over your crops, and it keeps the butterflies off the plant. And it works like a charm. They do it in Japan. They do it in England. Pretty much everywhere where they've been gardening a long time, they all use insect netting. Works like a charm.
Okay, because I had a peach tree in my yard, and them things eat my peach tree up, and they was getting more peaches than me, so I just cut the whole thing down.
Yeah, well, there's a whole different. There's a whole, you know, all moths and butterflies and flies, for that matter, have got larvae that eat other stuff. So it's a whole different, there's butterflies, there's moths, and so many different ones out there. Not much you can do about your peaches except spray them in insecticide, starting when the little peaches start to form. But, it's a whole different insect. But when it comes to your garden, netting is the easiest, most commonly used thing on earth, except for some reason Mississippians don't use netting. I think it's because granddaddy didn't.
All right,
but it works.
Yeah.
You know what? Check with the garden center or co-op. If they don't have it, insect netting, ask to get it. Otherwise, you go online and they got all different kinds of meshes. But the most commonly used kind is it's bigger than screen. It's real lightweight. You can pick up 100 yards of it. It's like you got a basketball one. It's really lightweight. But you just stretch that out, be planted on some stakes, and whenever you're ready to harvest, just lift it up and harvest.
So mosquito netting, like we used to sleep under when I was a kid out in the swamps.
It's not that fine. It's more like the netting like you'd find in a I can't think of the holes are about a quarter of an inch, quarter to half an inch. It's not a real fine netting. Matter of fact, you can hardly see it from a few feet away. So it's got a bigger mesh than mosquito netting.
So the co-op would know what I want, an insect netting.
Yeah, it's just called insect netting. They may not carry it because people don't come in asking for it. But you go to a garden center anywhere else, and they all got it. So anyway, it's a real lightweight netting, and it works like a charm. And you can use it over and over and over.
Yeah, the only netting we ever used was on our figs back when I was a kid.
It's kind of a lightweight net. I mean, the holes are pretty good. It's the same stuff. Bird netting will keep a butterfly out. So if you can't get insect netting, bird netting will do.
Okay, good. All right. Well, I appreciate you. Y'all take care.
Okay. Okay, Larry. Appreciate your call. And before we go to the next caller, Job, let me mention this. It's kind of weird. I went to an old botanic garden. It goes back to the 1500s. It's called the Kew Botanic Garden, Boyle Botanic Garden. I've been doing a whole bunch of time, different seasons. I was looking at some of the different things that they have displays, and I spent some time in the little area where the horticulture students, we're talking about the college students who study horticulture, they have an area set aside where every one of them is assigned a bed. It's about 4 feet wide, maybe 20 feet long. It's about maybe a little bit, about 100 square feet. And you cannot graduate from that Kew Botanic Garden horticulture program unless you've grown a garden. And they put a sign with your picture and all about you at the end of the row so people know whether you can garden or not. But anyway, I enjoyed that. But I was taking some pictures. Java, this is so crazy. I was taking some pictures of flowers, and behind me, heard a couple of women walk by. One of them said something in a distinct Mississippi dialect. She said to the other, "What's your favorite color green?" And I knew I heard something. Without any turning around, I said, "John Deere green." And these women stopped and stared at me, and they said, "Where are you from?" Long story short, they're from Lexington, from Holmes County, and one of their mothers is a master gardener from Madison.
And y'all came across each other at the Kew Garden overseas.
In London. But it only because I just happened to hear, "What's your favorite color green?" I'm thinking, that's a weird color because there's so many different. And I said, "John Deere green." Ended up taking a selfie for Mama just to prove it.
That's wild, man.
if I'd have kept my mouth shut, it would have been okay. But I couldn't help it. "What's your favorite color green?" I said, "John Deere green." So anyway, let's go up to Fulton. Rebecca, thank you for holding. How are you today?
Doing great. How are y'all?
So far, so good. What's up?
Well, I've got a question for you, and I think maybe you might have answered part of this before, and I missed part of the answer. I'm having problems. I'm not sure if it's bowls or molds, but we're having holes in the dirt, and it's awful. And we've sprinkled. I mean, my neighbor in the next apartment has sprinkled stuff down, but I know it's gone. But they're just everywhere, and I'm just wondering. What to do about it?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, the difference. Moles eat worms and grub worms and stuff like that, and they tunnel around just under the ground. So when they leave that tunnel, you know, it's really obvious where it sort of humps up. And so you'll see the tunnels going all out in the grass and stuff. Voles are little rodents that eat pretty much anything, including a lot of plant roots, and they tunnel around in flower beds and shrub beds and things. They don't get out of the lawn and make those tunnels. By the way, there's a lot of other things that'll do that too. Toads live in holes. They bury themselves in holes, and it's surprising when your waterman a toad pops out. And also cicadas, when they come out of the ground, they leave a hole the size of your thumb. You know all about cicadas, right?
I know a little bit about. Years or whatever.
Yeah. Have you ever found one of the dried skins that the larvae come out, the adult comes out of that dried skin? Have you ever seen one of those?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, that's how big the hole is. It's big enough to stick my thumb in, so it could be just that. But if it's something that's killing your plants and you pull them up and the plants don't have roots on them, that's voles. Unfortunately, we don't really have anything that'll control voles. You can put a mousetrap baited with peanut butter by the hole and put a flower pot on top of it so it stays dark, and they'll come out of it at night, and sometimes that'll work. But there are no poisons. They sell all sorts of stuff. There's nothing truly effective to control voles in a garden. It's really, really not. So think it might be cicada holes. That might be all it is. But if it's something that's eating your plant roots, what they do in botanic gardens, when they plant a flower bed, they dig the dirt out, put it in a shovel or on a tarp or something, and they line the bed with this stuff called hardware cloth. It's like half-inch mesh, wire mesh, and they line the beds with that, and they put the dirt back in. Basically, it's an underground fence. It's not practical for most home gardeners, but fencing, it works just like it does a deer. There's no good repellent. So, anyway, need to find out for sure if it is a vole, because I just don't know. There's so many things to leave those holes.
Well, I mean, right. Actually, it sounds like we've got more than one thing going on, because I actually have seen where the mole has dug up, and then I've seen the holes. So, evidently, we've got more than one thing going on.
Yeah. Well, that's the main difference. The moles tend to, they live in a burrow underground, and they make these... They'll have like a hallway that's under the ground, usually it's in a protected place. And then they go out every day. They dig a little side, like a side run that they use for feeding. So, you know, if it's moles, you'll see the ground kind of humped up, you know, where they tunnel through the ground. And it's different for moles. I really can't explain it more than that. They do have a trap that you can use for moles, and the mole trap, the plunger-type trap, it actually is the best control there is. And so it takes a little time, a little effort and persistence, but that's the only surefire way. And you'll hear every possible kind of folk remedy and home remedy and do this and do that, and you put some mothball. None of that really works for most people. So we've got to find out what it is first.
Right, okay. Well, thank you so much. And I just wanted to tell you, when Jermaine Flood and Jay White were up, and the whole bunch from MPB were up in Tupelo for the Elvis Festival, I got a Let's Get Dirty a Gestalt Gardener bandana.
Maybe you could tie that on a stick and put it out there. Maybe that'll keep them away.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. I wish I could be of more help, but it sounds like what I'm saying is negative, but really, we've got to find out for sure what it is. But thanks for calling, Rebecca. Appreciate you.
Well, Felder, it's funny. We were talking about moles and voles on a recent episode of Creature Comforts, and it was said to think about it like this. M is for meat eaters, and those are your moles, because, you know, they eat the insects, the grubs, the earthworms, and stuff like that. And V is for vegetarian, for your voles, because they eat the plant roots and the stems of the plants and stuff like that. So M is for meat eaters, and V is for vegetarian, moles and voles.
You know, it never surprised me, that new stuff that I learn all the time. And I've learned that, and also the difference between Canadian and American night crawlers. What a day this has been for me. Anyway, before I go to the next call, I want to ask Java something. You said they were talking about V for voles and M for moles. Did they say anything you could do about them?
No, I don't. I think that was the general consensus that, you know, it's not a whole lot of solution to those problems when it comes to moles and voles.
Yeah. Well, you know, on one hand, you know, they're all about wildlife, and I'm all about gardening, and the two go back and forth. They're closely entwined, and whether you like to kill things or control them or net them out or whatever, we got to have a solution, and sometimes they're just not a good one. So grasping at straws is what we end up doing. But anyway, let's slide down to Hattiesburg and talk with Bob. Bob, I appreciate you holding on. What's on, man? What's up?
Good morning, Felder.
Howdy. Yes.
I got a question you may have covered before, but I don't recall. Down here in the big city of Hattiesburg, all the landscapers, when they do any kind of landscaping, they put down this landscape fabric, then they plant shrubs and everything, and then they cover it up with pine straw and mulch. What's your point of view on that fabric? And to me, it seems that the natural decomposition of whatever you put around this mulch is not going to get through there and benefit anything, and it's also going to restrict water going through there.
But well, you're exactly right. I thoroughly understand the desire to prevent weeds and erosion and all that kind of stuff. I understand the process behind the landscape fabric, the weird beard fabric, but from a horticulture point of view, if you try to produce a crop, But as a gardener, and we deal with long-term stuff, putting that stuff down around shrubs is one of the worst things I could possibly imagine doing to my plants. You know, short-term crops, you know, horticulture crops, yeah, you want to do that. But around landscapes, it is a seriously, what's the nicest word I can think of? I can't think of a nice enough word for it. But anyway, you're right. It keeps, when you mulch, it keeps worms from coming up at night, eating the mulch and circulating it down around roots. So you don't have all that, you know, the new holes for air and water and roots and nutrients. And it really doesn't help with weeds. I mean, the worst weeds come right through it. So it's something that they do because it looks good. It looks professional. It looks horticultural. And for a couple of 3 years, it works fine. But after that, it is a horrible, horrible thing to do to roots that need that natural cycle of leaves and mulch being cycled into the soil by worms and bacteria and all that other stuff. So, the word I was thinking of, counterintuitive. It doesn't make sense. As a matter of fact, my opinion is, as a gardener, is a horrible, horrible practice. My opinion as a horticulturist, you're growing a short-term crop, harvesting it, digging it up, planting something, putting it down again year after year after year, that makes sense. But in the home garden, it is a terrible thing to do to roots and soil and worms and all that biosphere that's under the knee. It's a terrible thing.
Yeah, it's almost universal around here. When they do a new home, they'll put that stuff down, and it looks beautiful for a while, but our house has some. Would you recommend just raking the mulch out and then pulling all that up? That's probably what I should do.
That's the first thing. And by the way, the reason they do it is because the same reason people plant azaleas over and over and over. They see azaleas, they like them, they plant them. So more people see more, so they like them, they plant them. It becomes something that landscapers do partly because it's a profitable thing to do. You know, they get paid extra to do that. And it looks professional, but it is a terrible thing from a plant and a biosphere point of view. It's a terrible thing. I would routinely pull it up, or I would tell the landscapers, nope, just pull it up. Don't put it down. And so basically going against what the green industry makes money off doing versus in the long term what's good for our plants. So anyway, to me, there's no debate about it at all. It's a good short-term horticulture, terrible garden thing. I'd pull it up.
Makes sense. Thank you very much.
Okay. Appreciate it. Java, I kind of got my butt on my shoulder about that, didn't I?
Well, it's a good point to make because, you know, it's one of those things as far as what people do for reasons, but it may not be as beneficial to, you know, production or the plants in general.
It's just not. You know, I run up against this, and what's really strange, and a lot of people don't, I'm not complaining here, but I have my feet on both sides of a fence. On horticulture says, do this. And I understand that I'm a trained university horticulture scientist, and I understand why they're saying do that. On the other hand, the garden says, ouch, that's not really a good thing to do. And I understand that because I'm lazy. I'm in it for the long term. So if I say you don't need to use that stuff, the landscapers say I'm an idiot. I don't know what I'm talking about. If I say you really need to use that, our plants say, what the heck is this all about? It's like watering your grass every week. You know, Java, some people water the grass several times a week. And nobody's watering the grass at your kid's school, and it looks fine. So if I say you ought to water it every week, my dad would have said, Felder, you're an idiot. You don't have to water grass. If I say you don't have to water grass, the horticulture people say, I'm dumbing horticulture down. So I have to kind of balance it with that. And by the way, speaking of something, let me mention this. We got the lines open. If anybody wants to give us a call, Abram is back there in that booth. He's sort of scratching his head. He's reading his phone, whatever Abram does when he's not busy producing stuff. But Java, it's something that my daughter brought up to me the other day. It's kind of funny because, you know, we have folk names for everything. No matter what it is somebody does, there's a common word for it. But Zoe pointed out that there's no folk word for the oldest beverage on earth. You know what I'm talking about?
No, please enlighten me.
you know, this time of year, we're all trying to stay hydrated, and we're all drinking water. Everybody knows about water, but nobody ever says sipping on some moist.
Some what?
Some moist. Yeah, there's not a folk word for water. It's just water. There's no, you know, nobody said sure could go for a cup of that clear.
Yeah.
or Old Splash. Hey, give me some of that Old Splashy or whatever.
Now, that's, I think we're taking things a little, everything doesn't need a pet name.
Yeah, you know, if you're going outside, you know, you need to stock up on some Old Splashy before you go out. Take you some nice cold clear with you when you're going outside.
I don't know. Old Splashy, cold clear. Then, I don't know. We may have to push the envelope on this one.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Say, cup of that clear splash. What was the first thing? Just give me sipping on some moist. What you doing? I'm sipping on some moist.
Okay, Felder, we've extended this break long enough. We have Edward on the road who wants to join the conversation.
Edward, good morning. How are you? Thank you for saving me and Jabba from ourselves.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Fine. What's up?
I was up. So the question I have, first of all, I love your show. I travel for work between Louisiana and Alabama during the week, and so I love to get a chance to catch it on Friday. So thank you very much for having it. I thoroughly enjoy it. So I've got
a question here.
Great. So I've got some hydrangeas at home that I bought from, I think, one of the mass market stores, and they bloomed and looked pretty for about a month. Now they're still green. They're not dead. But they will refuse to bloom. So what do I need to do?
Yeah.
My wife tells me they're broken and I bought the wrong ones. So what do I need to do?
Well, keep in mind that there's must be a million opinions about this. And I just stick with what works for me. If people say, well, it's got to be in the shade. I see them growing out in the full sun. They say, well, they need to be, you know, planted shallow or whatever. They need to water all the time. I see hydrangeas around old home sites and bad dirt, no water, nothing. They tend to wilt down during the daytime when it's really, really hot because they have big, flimsy leaves, and they, you know, they're not slick like cannas or bananas. And so they'll wilt down as preservative thing, but then they perk back up in the evening. That's natural. So answer your question. The three things that I would check on, make sure, first of all, that when you planted them, you dug a wide hole, 2-3 feet across. That's crazy, but that's what it takes. Second of all, you add a little bit of stuff to your dirt, not much, like about a handful of crackers to a bowl of chili. You know, just add a little stuff to your dirt to loosen it up. And then third, when you plant it, loosen up the potting soil and the roots to get it out of that bark, that container-shaped ball of bark. So loosen up the roots, help them get out of your native dirt as far as they can, as fast as they can, and then cover the ground with mulch. I prefer tree leaves or bark, or tree leaves topped with bark, and then just give them a really good soaking every week or two, a good soaking. That way their roots will grow quickly outward, and that's the key to getting them strong and sturdy, which is the key to them blooming. If they're struggling, they're not going to bloom because flowers take a lot of energy. So wide hole, little stuff, loosen up the roots, mulch, not too much water. And they may not bloom this first year, but they'll be bigger and bulkier, and they'll just really jump the next year. So I hope that wasn't too much to throw on you while you're driving.
No, absolutely. No, thank you very much. I guess my first to realize that actually I haven't even taken them out of their containers they came in. I think that's my first issue.
Oh, boy.
I haven't transported them, so I didn't realize I had to do that. Thank you.
Well, you don't have to do all that, but if you want to get the most, if you want to plant them and then walk away from them, they'll bloom for decades. That's what you do. If they're not blooming in a pot, make sure fertilizer washes away. It's real fast in a pot, the more often you water. So you might want to use a little half strength or some kind of good quality potted plant food. I'm thinking Miracle-Gro or something like that. Half strength, not full strength. Whatever it says for a gallon of water, put that in 2 gallons of water, and then just water them regularly so that they don't stay dry when they get dry out. And that's about all you can do. But they'll actually do better in the ground.
Okay, thank you. I've got one more question real quick. does the rose, like at the stores they sell like rose feed or feed for roses, is that only for roses or can I use that for other plants, other flowers?
No, you can use that for anything. I mean, they come up with, different brands of, ketchup, you know? Yeah, somebody's going to come up with one called burger sauce. It's just ketchup. So, no, any kind of flower plant food will work fine, but use it at half the recommended strength. We want to keep them supplied with nutrients. We don't want to push them in this much heat and humidity. We don't want to push them too much right now.
Well, thank you very much. I've got a degree from agriculture economics from LSU, and I know nothing about any of them. So thank you very much.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you for your call, man.
Right, bye-bye.
Okay, Java. He saved us from our thing about give me some old splash, sip on some moist type of thing.
Some old splashy.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff going on the Mississippi Gardening Facebook page. I know a lot of people say, I don't do social media. Well, folks, I don't either. There's not a fellow rushing Facebook or Instagram or anything like that. But I do spend a lot of time helping moderate the Mississippi Gardening Facebook. It's safe. Nobody is allowed to join without having to agree. First of all, you're going to be nice. You know, just be nice. If you don't want to prune your plants, don't tell other people they can't prune it. You know, that kind of thing. But there's a lot of horticulturists on there. Bob Bruzak from Mississippi State. Carol Reese from University of Tennessee. Gary Bachman is on there. There's retired extension agents. There's Alan Owens from LSU. There's a lot of people on there, and they're just talking gardening, not horticulture, but gardening. So there's a lot of people that sort of tamp down on all the weirdnesses out there. So if you are interested in just joining a group of folks who like to show pictures of their grandkids or their hummingbirds or, you know, playing in the garden, Mississippi Gardening on Facebook. It's a safe site. And it doesn't cost a thing to join. Just got to be nice, because if you don't, you're going to get warned. So anyway, we've got the lines open, and I think we've got time if anybody wants to squeeze another call or two.
Yeah, let's actually go to Mike and Hernando, if you're ready, Felder.
Oh, I see that now. You sent that to me. Thank you, Java. Let's go up to Hernando. Mike, what's going on, man? Howdy.
Morning, Felder. Question, please. I grew up out west, and just a few minutes ago you were talking about watering yards and stuff like that, and I built my house here 8 years ago in Hernando. Had a beautiful lawn put in. I have never watered it, and it stays gorgeous green. I mean, is that natural to the south, or should I be watering it? Because it's a beautiful yard.
That's a really good question, Mike. And here's the bottom line is, you do not have to water your lawn in Mississippi, but in the heat of the summer, if it's really dry, it will go dormant. It'll turn brown. It'll green back up after rain. But while it's shut down, it's temporarily not replacing itself with new growth, and sometimes that leads to weeds. So from the grass's point of view, it needs a good deep soaking at least once a month from rain or otherwise. Every 3 weeks would be better. But more than once a week is actually counterintuitive. So a good deep soaking every 3 or 4 weeks, if you don't get without rain, you'll have a better quality lawn, and it won't shut.
Oh.
See, grass doesn't – we're not keeping grass alive. What we're trying to do is help grass replace itself with new growth, and there's a complete turnover out there about once a month. So what you had in June is gone by August. It's replaced itself. So we're watering and fertilizing to help it put out healthy new grass. That's also deep-rooted. Well, so every 3 or 4 weeks is great.
Well, the reason I asked was every August I watch, because I know that's the hottest month, and mine always has looked really pretty. I mean, it doesn't have shade trees over it or anything, but it stays gorgeous green, and I thought maybe this is magic grass or something, because I'm used to growing up out west where if you didn't water it, it'd be dead at the end of the week. You know,
that's right. But see, we also have a different kind of grass here. But apparently, you got really good dirt, so your grass is able to get good deep roots. And once it got good deep roots, it can keep replacing those. But in a bad dirt or water too much, it's more dependent on a little water. So sounds like least once. If we go a month without rain, water it, not to keep it green, but to help it be green a month later.
Oh, good point. I will do that. Thanks for that tip. Appreciate it.
Okay, man. You bet. Thank you. And we got time to go to Craig in Biloxi.
Real quick, man. Let's slide him in.
Craig, what's up, man?
Yeah, I was wondering if there's any good, strong bamboo that would grow in Florida. And I'd like to throw out Mountain Dew or the Dew Drop In for your water, folksy water.
Okay. Those are great ones. To answer your question, first of all, any bamboo will do well on the coast. Further north you go, the fewer options. The clump-forming bamboos don't grow well in north Mississippi. But down down on the coast, you can grow almost any kind of bamboo, as long as you understand that some, the running kind, are going to cause problems with your neighbors. But almost all the bamboos do great along the Gulf Coast.
All right, thank you. I heard it's stronger than steel per week.
Yeah.
Is what I got. Okay,
there you go. Thank you, Craig. Okay, Java. Man, we knocked a bunch of stuff out today. I'm horticulturist Felder Rushing, and me and Java and Abram and all the other folks at Mississippi Public Broadcast, we appreciate you. We appreciate you supporting us through the year. But every Friday morning, we broadcast on Saturday, and on the podcast, we're talking about gardening. So if you have some things you want to chat about, shoot us a line and give us a call. Meanwhile, if you got kids or if you don't have kids, you got neighbors, go to a farmer's market. Garden centers have got plenty of stuff to get geared up for fall. We can still plant tomatoes and peppers and stuff like that, marigolds. But go to a garden center and show kids how to do what we do best, and that's get dirty. Y'all have a good week. See you next week.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.